ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Well, let's take a look at the sporting world as we do on Tuesday night with Warwick Hadfield, journalist and sports writer, author, raconteur and all the rest. And, of course, the demise in the last few days of one of Australia's sporting greats, Golden Boots as he was known, the league player Keith Barnes.
Here comes Balmain, captained by Keith Barnes, who kicked three goals for the Tigers in each of his two previous grand final clashes against St George in 56 and 64. He's kicked 65 during the season, and this one makes it 66. Attaboy! From the blind side, Barnes weaves into the clear, and Leo is in support. The front row is Wigglesworth's solid service, supported by Barnes.
Cover defence coming across. Can Barnes get him? And Barnes bundles him into touch.
Barnes comes in to take his kick. And a magnificent kick by Barnes, raising the flag once again.
Yes, Warwick, good evening to you.
Good evening to you, Philip.
He was quite something, wasn't he?
Well, he was. I mean, the stats are tremendous. 954 goals. He was known as Golden Boots because he was a great goal kicker. A lot of those, 742, in fact, for his much-loved Balmain. And he was also the highest, for a long time, the highest point scorer at Balmain, 1,590, because he could score tries as well. And he kicked one field goal. But great as those numbers are, as with all statistics, they don't always tell the full measure of the person. He was, in my mind, a sort of a rugby league version of Johnny Farnham, a newcomer from the United Kingdom who came to this country and greatly enriched us. He was a gentle man in every sense, and he chose New South Wales over old South Wales. He was born in Port Talbot. And look, his new valley, as a boyo from the valley, he was it was the Parramatta River Valley. And first with Balmain and then Australia, he became, well, one of the most celebrated players of his generation. The number one, if you like, because the fullback does wear number one. And look, we talk about the goal kicking, but despite he only had a slight frame, he was never a big man. And he, towards the end of his time, he was heavily bandaged like a racehorse. Mm. He could still break tackles and make tackles, but yeah, of course, it was his goal kicking, and he could kick goals from anywhere. He had it was all about timing. He did it with an old-fashioned toe-pick style, and with those daggy old leather balls, it just got heavier and heavier as the game went
exactly.
on.
Yeah, exactly, particularly on a wet day.
He could kick it from, on a wet day, but he could kick it from the other side of halfway, which is always it's one of the measures of a great goal kicker. So I love watching him, mostly on black and white television or listening to it on the radio growing up in Sydney. One of the amazing things was he never quite lost his Welsh accent. So we had this lovely melodic, when he became a commentator, we had this lovely melodic Welsh accent calling this most strident of Australian games. It was sort of a funny thing. But Keith Barnes, not yet among the whole list of rugby league holders, which of course being entered into the immortals, but I can't see that elevation being that far away.
Where would you place him in? Oh, look, these things are always harder, though. Sometimes they're a bit arid, aren't they? Saying how good past players were against the modern game, but
before him there was Clive Churchill, who was the Prince of Fullbacks at South Sydney. And then along came Keith Barnes. There was the wonderful Les Johns, who I got to know very, very well, because he also played high standard of cricket. Nice to knock around with him at Sutherland Cricket Club in Sydney. He was a tremendous fullback, and such a good fullback that Graham Langlands, the great St George fullback, had to be moved to the inside centre position whenever Australia picked a team. But in those days, Australia was very, very dominant against Great Britain, and I think they could have picked a lot of people. And, of course, then you had Eric Sims, not the greatest of players, but he could kick goals and field goals from just about anywhere, and that got him into the team. And in the modern game, well, there's been plenty. A bloke called Billy Slater. Boy, it's, when you think back, Billy Slater, I always compare Billy Slater to Clive Churchill, and I think the modern generation has produced a few. At the moment, though, one of those is an enfant terrible at South Sydney by the name of Latrell Mitchell, who's been suspended for 3 weeks at the moment, and he's got his teammates and his club officials wondering what's going on. That's a lot of people are wondering what's going on at South Sydney at the moment. It seems the coach is about to get the sack there as well. But Keith Barnes, having being such a great player, became a steadying administrator at Balmain as well. And I think, steadying hand is, it was just the kind of person he was. He took things calmly. They had a very, very good side, and he was the administrator that kept them together, managed all the payments and that sort of thing. So he wasn't just a great goal kicker. There was much, much more to this man. And when he is elevated to the immortals, the holy of holies, as I call it, it'll be richly deserved, that's for sure.
Mm. AFL news. Chief executive of the AFL, Andrew Dillon, has promised Port Adelaide forward Jeremy Finlayson will be made accountable for his homophobic slur. What's going on here?
Well, he made the call on last Friday night against an Essendon player as yet. Well, everyone knows who it is, but it's publicly unnamed. A six-letter word. The AFL is investigating it, which is code for we're just waiting to see what we can do, what we can manipulate. Because the AFL prefers to sort of make up its mind what the penalty is going to be and work towards it. You know, Andrew Dillon, the current CEO, he learned how to do that under Andrew Demetriou and Gillon McLachlan. But I think at the moment the mood of the public is such that they won't be able to get away with it this time. The AFL's made a rod for its own back. Not that long ago, the North Melbourne coach, Alistair Clarkson, committed a similar offence, and he was only fined when I think most people thought something stronger was necessary to confirm the AFL's set of values. Now, Finlayson supporters, and they're a diminishing number at the moment, it seems, will claim if he doesn't get a fine, there'll be a rule for one and not another rule for other. But for a long time, that's applied to Alistair Clarkson anyway. So I would think there's every likelihood that Finlayson will be suspended for some time. I think the AFL is discovering that the mood in the public is such, you know, it's the sport reflecting the society in which it's played, and people just won't tolerate that sort of thing anymore. So I think all the closed doors of AFL House behind their famous portcullis, there'll be a lot of stuff going on right now to thinking, you know, how are we going to justify what we didn't do to Clarkson at the same time when we suspend this young fella from Port Adelaide?
Warwick Hadfield's with us in Warwick's weekly wrap. Mind you, on-field performances are important, aren't we? We talked about the Eagles last week.
Yeah.
They didn't win again because, hey, the Swans beat them. at a very curious gather round, we were playing at a country football ground at Mount Barker. But anyway, that's... But the Crows aren't in much better shape, are they?
Well, no, and it's a lot of people are asking the question, what's gone wrong with the Crows? I think there's the always dangerous thing of believing the pre-season hype and the players and the coaching staff. You know, everyone's talking about them being finalists, and that might be one of the problems. But I know that the coach, watching what happens in Adelaide, I know that the coach Matthew Hicks needs to get a quick fix. And it might be too late. It's hard to play finals from zip four, as they love to say. And as Brenton Sanderson and plenty of other previous coaches at Adelaide have found out, the supporters are quick to turn. One of my mates who was a coach there came back to his car one day to find two bob bits had been rung down the side of it after the Crows had lost. And look, it's not just the supporters, it's the power brokers as well in Adelaide. They talk to each other in their private clubs and boardrooms and... they get nasty pretty quickly, and they do that even more quickly if Port Adelaide is going well. Adelaide is that sort of a footy town, Philip.
Of course it is. Hey, let's talk about a sport that doesn't get a lot of publicity, baseball, in particular women's baseball.
Yeah,
there's an odd story here. Go on.
Yeah, well, the women's national championships were on and everything was going along swimmingly until everyone was swimming. The grand final got washed out. It was supposed to be between Victoria and New South Wales. Mm. And they waited and they waited and they waited. And eventually the rain came. So because Victoria was in front after the previous rounds, the Victorians were named the champions. New South Wales are silver medalists and Queensland the bronze. And among the individual awards, Victoria also cleaned up with the most valuable player.
They didn't replay it.
No, there was no provision because it was right through until the eighth, and these people aren't the sort of people who can take too many days off work. This is very much an amateur sport, so they all had to get home and get back to their jobs. So they said, right, Victoria is the winner. It's interesting. The story of baseball in this country's quite interesting. It goes right back to the 1860s, 1870s.
It does. It's got a long history, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And the Americans, like Spalding, did come out here and try as entrepreneurs to get it established here. But Spalding was much more successful in America, particularly after the Civil War. Because up until the Civil War, apparently, cricket and baseball were pretty much neck and neck. in America. But Spalding and his team of entrepreneurs really was outsmarted the cricket folk. Cricket became a sort of a game of the elite and thought to be old England and that sort of stuff, and baseball was seen as the game of the people. But over the years, it's still had some influence in Australia, because some of Australian cricketers, some of the most brilliant fielders like Ian and Greg Chappell and Alan Border, got their throwing techniques from playing.
Oh, well, exactly.
Baseball.
I mean, it's not going to make any progress in Australia, because cricket's got occupied the ground, hasn't it? Because the skills are very similar. Anybody who's watched a top flight American baseball game would know that fielding, I mean, the returns of fielders to the base is quite something. I mean, you know, they come in hard and flat and with extraordinary accuracy.
Well, baseball players have been used as coaches for elite Australian cricketers now for the last little while, and have improved the fielding enormously. I went to Yankee Stadium, and that's quite an extraordinary thing to do. I was lucky enough to be in some expensive seats, I guess they were. I could only afford one for one game. The people sitting in front of me had season's tickets, and in between inning, they would be looking at the NASDAQ and Wall Street. I think it's very much, they say that cricket was the game for the elite, but for this particular part of baseball, Yankee Stadium was very much for the people of Wall Street and Lower Manhattan and those sorts of places.
Yes, exactly. I once went to see a game at Fenway Park in Boston with the Boston Red Sox, and the bloke next to me, the two young fellas next to me, looking very preppy young fellas, said, "God damn, how'd you get those seats?" I said, "Well, I just went up to the box office and said, are there any spare seats for tonight's game?" And they said, "Yeah, we got one. Here it is." He said, "Wow." And they just gave you a seat like that. I said, "Yes." He said, "Because let me tell you how I got my seats." He said, "I know the owner." So, yeah.
Well, the people that we were sitting next to just thought it was amazing that someone would come all the way from Australia to want to see the Yankees. But, of course, Dennis Lilly used to get around in a New York Yankees cap all those years ago. And that part of, I mean, particularly the Yankees are well known in Australia.
They're both bat and ball games. So, you would think that Australian cricketers would do quite well. It's much more difficult to hit a baseball than a cricket ball, though, isn't it?
I would think so. I mean, it's...
I mean, the sweets... I mean, the tie... I mean, you... Is the ball...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to get a cricketer on and a baseballer on and ask that question. It's... I think the fact that the there's movement off the pitch makes it harder for a cricketer.
But you can curve. You can curve the baseball.
Yeah, that's right. The swerve. In fact, it was an American who invented what we call swing bowling. It was swerve bowling. J. Barton King, playing for Philadelphia, took the swerve of baseball and introduced it to cricket. And he was so dominant that in one game he sent all nine fielders off, and just with the wicketkeeper, he bowled the opposition out. So, and Bradman, on a tour, I think on the way to England, Bradman met Babe Ruth as well. So there was this, I mean, I think everyone had to explain to America who Bradman was, but a lot of Australians didn't know who Babe Ruth was. And I was there on Lou Gehrig Day, which of course was a very, very poignant day. Lou Gehrig, of course, dying as a young man after being one of the greatest baseball players that the Yankees ever produced.
Yep. Now, this week, of course, a big week for golf. The Masters is on at Augusta, Georgia. And we've got some Aussies in the mix, of course. Cameron Smith.
Yep.
He'd love to win it, and could, but probably won't, I suspect. But anyway, just based on his live golf form. But we've got two of the most exciting players in the world, and their brother and sister, Min Woo and Minji Lee, haven't we? Min Woo will beat the Masters, yeah.
Well, he will, but Minji Lee was playing in a tournament in Las Vegas last week, and all of a sudden, it was the big story of the day, not because she was playing well, but because her brother had turned up to watch her. And they have very, very much become celebrities. Mm. And of course, Min Woo hasn't won a Masters or a major yet.
No,
his sister's won one. And she also won the Evian Championships in France a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, in fact. And that's regarded as the fifth major. But look, they're only... Min Woo's 25, Minji, the big sister's 27. They've both got plenty of time to add to whatever their CV. I love the story. One, there are many stories about them, of course, but the story I love because it just showed how quickly he's risen up the ladder of golfers. Minwoo won the Scottish Open, and that gave him automatic entry into the British Open, and the only way he could get there was by private jet. His eyes were agog at, you know, being feted on this private jet instead of sitting in economy where he'd been for much of his career thus far. And look, I think, you know, in time he's probably capable of winning a major. So whether it'll be this week at Augusta.
We shall see. It's an extraordinarily difficult sport, golf at that level. Look, football, the Matildas are playing Mexico, this is women's football in San Antonio. They're short of a few players, but they're all trying to, they're trying to tune up for Paris, aren't they?
Well, those who are fitter, the infirmary is overflowing. Of course, Samantha Kerr's gone for the duration, but now, we've got Avi Luke, Katrina Gorey, Claire Hunt, Courtney Nevin, Chloe Lazgarza all out. Emily Gilnick was called in as a replacement, and then she injured herself in the training camp. So for the coach, Tony Gustafsson, he calls it he's going to have to try a few things. He hates, apparently, the word experimenting. And there's a discussion going on about whether there is the critical mass of talent yet in women's football in Australia and whether Gustafsson has been doing enough to create it. Despite all that he is doing, and of course, remember how well Australia did at the World Cup, he does still have his critics in this country, but I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how they go against Mexico, whether the replacements do show the capacity to provide the depth. And look, there's another fella who's had a lot of critics, another Australian-born coach, Ange Postecoglou. He's got Tottenham into the top four in the English Premier League. And when you look back, he was doubted at Brisbane. He was doubted when he went to Japan. Then he went to Scotland and they doubted him to start with and then couldn't get enough of him. And then when he went to Tottenham, well, they said, well, look, this the way he coaches, it's not going to work in this level. There'll be all the hard heads will be able to work him out. But there they are, Tottenham in the top four. And be interested. They probably won't win, but they're going to make life difficult for some of the sides in front of them, Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool. And there's some damn good sides behind him. And look, there is this theory that Ange is still building. He still wants to come back and coach the Australian men's side sometime in the future to another World Cup. And I'll be interested to see that. Look, speaking of Liverpool, I've got to tell you this story. I was in Liverpool doing the Beatles thing not that long ago, and we had a tour guide on one of those buses, and he said with a big grin on his face, look, if you want a cup of tea, don't go to a cafe which is owned by Everton because, boom, tish, they don't have any cups.
Boom, boom, boom. Go away.
I will.
All right, Warren. Thanks for that. We'll talk next week.
Good on you, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.